values that the community has built up over previous generations. But when they're faced with a new situation, with an environment that's changing rapidly, they either change or crumble away, Stoner finished his wife's thought. They're turning their backs on the solutions they have at the fingertips. It's like they don't want to solve the problems they're facing.
We've got to make them understand, Stoner muttered.
The immediate problem is to prevent the nuclear war that's coming.
We could control their leaders, Stoner mused. Manipulate them to do what we want.
Joe countered, There's billions of them, and only the four of us. How can we control them all?
And even if we did, Stoner added, they'd go right back to their usual ways the instant we stopped controlling them.
Of course they would, Joe said,
her voice low, troubled. We've got to make them understand, Stoner repeated. We've got to help them to see the right path and follow it.
A nuclear war could kill them all, Joe murmured, and most of the other species besides.
Then there'd be nobody left, Stoner said. Nobody. Anywhere.
There'd be the people living off Earth, Joe said. There are enough people living off Earth to keep the race going, even if Earth self-destructs.
Do you think so? I wonder.
I see what you mean, Joe said.
If Earth self-destructs, could the human race continue off Earth?
Would it change anything? Wouldn't the survivors eventually fight each other? Wouldn't they head toward genocide?
Toward extinction, Stoner muttered.
So what of it? Joe's tone hardened. If they're so dead set on destroying themselves, why don't we let them do it and get it over with?
No, Stoner said. We can't.
Why not? Joe insisted. Why don't we just leave them to stew in their own juices and go out and explore? It's a big universe out there. Somewhere there's got to be...
No, Stoner repeated more firmly. I ran away from Earth once. I'm not going to do it again. I can't.
Why not? Why should we kill ourselves trying to help them when they don't have the brains to survive?
Because it's us we're talking about, Stoner shot back. It's not just them, it's us. We're part of the human race, and whatever happens to them happens to us too.
Breaking into a warm smile, Joe said, Just as I thought. You've got a messiah complex.
He ignored her jibe. We can't just let them die. They're part of us and we're part of them. We can't let intelligent life doom itself to extinction.
Joe's smile turned bitter. You're assuming that we can do something to prevent it.
We've got to help them, Stoner insisted.
But how?
I wish I knew, Stoner said. We're so damned limited. It's like trying to hold back the tide with your bare hands.
You could make them behave, said Joe.
Set myself up as their god? He shook his head. No thanks. They've got to work this out for themselves. We can help them, but we can't force them.
Joe touched her husband's shoulder. You'll find a way, Keith.
If anyone in the universe can find a way, you will. He gave her a grudging smile. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
But how? You're going to see Archbishop Overmyer, aren't you? That's the place to start.
Maybe, he said, uncertain. Then, or maybe the place to start is with that woman, Sister Angelique. Book 3. Angelique Dupree. The unleashed power of the atom has changed everything save our modes of thinking.
Albert Einstein.
Chapter 1. Angelique could not sleep. She lay on her bed, staring at the shadows playing back and forth across her ceiling as traffic rolled past on the interstate outside her thick, soundproofed window. Her home was a Spartan studio apartment set high in one of the glass and steel towers on the edge of the New Morality's headquarters complex. 12 of the building's 22 floors were occupied by her order, the Sisters of the Savior. Stoner is more than human, she kept thinking. He has powers beyond any human capability, and he wants me to help him. Me. Bishop Craig is frightened of him. Good. I'll move Craig out of the loop and take Stoner to Archbishop Overmyer myself. She smiled to herself. All Craig is interested in is becoming the next archbishop. He'll never get there. He's a weakling, terrified of Stoner. I can see the fear that underlies his life. Stoner's brought it out into the open. Instead of seeing Stoner for the opportunity he is, the bishop is terrified of him. All right? Good. I'll bring Stoner to the archbishop myself. I'll become the power behind his throne. With Stoner at my side, I can control the entire new morality apparatus. I can control the entire nation and all its dependencies. With a little luck and a lot of skill, she thought, I can eventually control the whole world. As long as I have Stoner at my side. She was born Aretha Devers in one of the 10 cities that dotted the Georgia landscape after the greenhouse floods had swept away most of Florida and the Gulf Coast communities all the way up to Houston and Shreveport. She never knew her two brothers. Both drowned when their rattletrap school bus overturned on a washed-out road in the middle of a blinding midnight thunderstorm. Her father had worked in the county tax collector's office, but losing his home, his city, his career, his sons broke his spirit. He sank into a numb acceptance of the fact that his life was finished. He was just going through the motions, living on the government's dole, moving from one tent city to another, then to a hastily erected refugee center, and finally to a spanking new housing complex built by the new morality in the heart of what had previously been the seediest, most run-down neighborhood of sprawling Atlanta. Her mother never surrendered to poverty or despair, not even when her two sons were killed. All during her pregnancy with her daughter, she worked ceaselessly to organize the dazed and battered refugees in their tent city. As they moved from one relocation center to another, she became a local force, an ardent spokeswoman for her downtrodden neighbors. Eventually, inevitably, the new morality appointed her the watchwoman for their new community. Her mother wanted 12-year-old Aretha to join the new morality's urban core. But Aretha had plans of her own. Young as she was, she recognized that the new morality held the power over the people. The urban core was too low on their ladder of advancement to suit her. She aimed higher, and got her school's placement advisor to recommend her for a training position in the new morality's headquarters. But she was gang-raped one afternoon by a band of local toughs who left her sprawled in an alley, bleeding and half-unconscious. While her mother wailed and the police dithered, Aretha marched her battered body to the convent of the new morality's Sisters of the Savior, and, head high, asked them for sanctuary. She entered the convent, changed her name to Angelique Dupree, willingly took the veil and vowed eternal chastity, swearing to devote her life to helping others through the new morality and its associated churches, knowing that this was the surest way to rise above her impoverished beginnings. She even trained herself to mimic the lilting Jamaican accent of her mother superior. It sounded so much more self-assured in her ears. Her mother died of a stroke 2 weeks after Aretha finished her schooling and was ready to re-enter the world as Sister Angelique Dupree. Her father lived on, stumbling through the days and empty nights, as passive as his wife had been active. He finally succumbed to an overdose of the medications he had been taking for hypertension and atrial fibrillation. There was no investigation into his death. Angelique saw to it that the local coroner ruled it accidental, so that her father would not be stigmatized as a suicide and refused burial in hallowed ground. Alone now, and unburdened by family, Sister Angelique worked her way upward in the new morality's labyrinth of bureaucracies until at last she was appointed to the staff of Bishop Zebulon Craig. And there she met Keith Stoner, who claimed to be a star voyager. She also met Raul Tavalera, a lost and bewildered young man who somehow seemed to be in the middle of this star voyager problem. Tavalera was linked in some manner to Stoner, which told Sister Angelique that to stay close to Stoner, she had to stay close to Tavalera. But more importantly, she had to push Bishop Craig to deal with Stoner, or rather she had to move Craig out of the picture and advance herself into the good graces of Archbishop Overmyer. Stoner was an opportunity, she knew, a godsend, literally, but perhaps a danger as well. If she were truly religious, she might be frightened of him. But ambition